This is what the Lord has said in Psalm 45. For the sons of Korah, Maskil, a song of loves. My heart is inditing a good matter. I speak of the things which I have made, touching the king. My tongue is the pen of a ready writer. Thou art fairer than the children of men. Grace is poured into thy lips. Therefore God hath blessed thee forever. Gird thy sword upon thy thigh, O most mighty, with thy glory and thy majesty. And in thy majesty ride prosperously because of truth and meekness and righteousness. And thy right hand shall teach thee terrible things. Thine arrows are sharp in the heart of the king's enemies, whereby the people fall under thee. Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. The scepter of thy kingdom is a right scepter. Thou lovest righteousness and hatest wickedness. Therefore God, thy God, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness above thy fellows. All thy garments smell of myrrh and aloes and cassia out of the ivory palaces, whereby they have made thee glad. King's daughters were among thy honorable women. Upon thy right hand did stand the queen in gold of Ophir. Hearken, O daughter, and consider, and incline thine ear. Forget also thine own people and thy father's house. So shall the king greatly desire thy beauty, for he is thy Lord, and worship thou him. And the daughter of Tyre shall be there with a gift. Even the rich among the people shall entreat thy favor. The king's daughter is all glorious within. Her clothing is of wrought gold. She shall be brought unto the king in raiment of needlework. The virgins, her companions that follow her, shall be brought unto thee. With gladness and rejoicing shall they be brought, they shall enter into the king's palace. Instead of thy father shall be thy children, whom thou mayest make princes in all the earth. I will make thy name to be remembered in all generations. Therefore shall the people praise thee forever and ever. To the chief musician. And may the Lord bless the reading of his word to our hearts today. In Psalm 45, the psalmist has been glorifying the king of the psalm, who is Jesus Christ. He has praised his personal virtue in verse 2, his military ability in verses 3 through 5, and, beginning with verse 6, his kingdom. Paul's use of verses 6 and 7 we found to be very significant for identifying this king as Jesus Christ and as God. Psalm 45, from Paul's perspective, leaves us with a king who is God and man, and only Jesus Christ could be this king. All other suggestions of Solomon or Ahab or Jehoram or any other king falls far short of even partially filling the description of this king. Some of the superlatives which no other king could match is the description of Christ's beauty being greater than any of the sons of Adam, his reign being upright, and his throne eternal, and, of course, his divinity. Jesus Christ is in a class all by himself with no equal, and all others fall far short. As we continue in Psalm 45, we continue to see the glory of Christ's kingdom. Verse 8 says, "All thy garments smell of myrrh and aloes and cassia out of the ivory palaces, whereby they have made thee glad." Verses 6 and 7 spoke about the righteousness of Christ's reign and its eternality. Now the psalmist begins to describe more concrete aspects of the kingdom. And one of the general aspects of the kingdom described from verse 8 and following is the wealth of the kingdom. The king personally wears clothing which are richly scented with myrrh and aloes and cassia. In the latter part of the verse, the King James Version mistook the words for stringed instruments as a preposition. The latter part should be translated, "Stringed instruments from the ivory palaces have made you glad." And again we see the wealth of this glorious king being praised. He has palaces decorated in large part by ivory. He has musicians playing in the rooms of his palaces, and these instruments bring gladness to his heart. In verse 9, we continue to see the prominence of his courtroom. King's daughters were among the honorable women. Upon thy right hand did stand the queen in gold of Ophir. These daughters of other kings who are present in the king's courtroom are said to be honorable women. The word for honorable women can also indicate costly or expensive. The implication is that their clothing was very expensive and beautiful. The wealth of such clothing brings them to a sense of honorableness. And the wealth displayed in the clothing is what we saw in the smell of the king's garment. What we see with the queens being clothed in gold of Ophir, and later how the king's daughter is clothed with colorfully embroidered clothing. But let us say again that the wealth displayed with all these people is reflective of the king's glory and radiance. Concerning these women, it is said to the king that they are among his expensively dressed women. It is his rule that has brought such wealth to these people, just as Solomon's reign brought great wealth to the Israel of his day. Now some commentators consider the king to be Solomon, or one of the other Israelite kings, and the women mentioned here to be his wives and concubines. Solomon particularly married the daughters of kings in order to establish peace treaties with the surrounding nations. But there are several problems with identifying these women as other wives of the king. The first problem is that such a theory is not based on anything stated in the passage. The verse does not say that they are wives or concubines. They are identified only as daughters of other kings, and that they are women whose rich clothing adorns the palace of the king. So nothing is said of them being the king's other wives. The second problem is in seeing Solomon as any other Israelite king besides Christ in the rest of the psalm. Solomon certainly comes the closest to fitting the description with his wealth and wisdom and righteous reign at least through most of his kingdom. But he would not be described as the valiant hero riding into battle because he was a man of peace. And he certainly was not to be described as God himself. The third problem is found in the praise of polygamy, if this verse was truly describing other wives. The law is very clearly against polygamy for kings, and yet if this theory be true, we would have one of the great Psalms of the Psalter giving praise to the king's polygamous relationships. And the fourth problem, again, from the standpoint of the law's condemnation of such an act, is that the king was described as loving righteousness and hating wickedness. If the king truly did love righteousness and hate wickedness, he would not wander into polygamy against his God. The final problem is that the king is no other than Jesus Christ, as Paul clearly indicates in Hebrews chapter 1. Jesus Christ is no polygamist. He has one queen, and that is the church. So such a theory that makes these women other wives and concubines cannot be considered a possibility for these reasons. Then who are these women, these daughters of other kings? Well, when we see the whole psalm to speak of Christ in his second coming, and this portion of the psalm to be of his millennial kingdom, these daughters of kings, presumably, are daughters of the surrounding kingdoms of the world. These kingdoms will submit to Christ's kingship. These daughters may do the work of serving the king in his very courtroom. Then at the end of the verse, we find the queen herself clothed in very expensive clothing. Upon thy right hand did stand the queen in gold of Ophir. The gold of Ophir is mentioned in various passages. It was obviously a very precious and expensive gold, and here the queen is adorned with it. But she is adorned with this gold as she stands at the right hand of the king. You have to imagine such a wonderfully displayed throne room as the psalmist is praising the king. The king himself has wonderfully smelling clothing. The stringed instruments fill the air with sweet music. There are these lavishly clothed women all around the room. And at the king's right hand is the queen herself, decked in gold. This is all spoken to the king, and in praise of his greatness. The ultimate reaction to this glorious description should be as the Queen of Sheba's, when she came to visit Solomon, when it says, "And when the Queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom, and the house that he had built, and the meat of his table, and the sitting of his servants, and the attendance of his ministers, and their apparel, and his cupbearers, and his ascent by which he went up unto the house of the Lord, there was no spirit in her." There was no spirit in her. As the psalmist speaks of our King's glory, we should be vastly impressed and longing even more for him and his kingdom to come. But then the psalm makes a significant change. In verse 10, the king is no longer being addressed. All the second person pronouns change from masculine, referring to the king, to feminine, referring to a woman. This woman is referred to as daughter, when it says, "Hearken, O daughter, and consider, and incline thine ears. Forget also thine own people, and thy father's house. So shall the king greatly desire thy beauty, for he is thy Lord, and worship thou him." Some say that the daughter is the daughter of Tyre, mentioned in verse 12, and that this is Jezebel marrying Ahab, or Athaliah marrying Jehoram. But these are absurd suggestions, comparing the righteous king of Psalm 45 to such unfaithful men as Ahab and Jehoram. Some also connect this daughter with the king's daughter of verse 13. But in verse 14, where it is said that the companions of the king's daughter shall be brought to thee, the one being spoken to is this same daughter of verse 10. The king's daughter with her companions cannot be brought to herself. So these daughters are two different daughters. I suggest that the woman addressed in verse 10 is called daughter in the same sense that we are called son in the books of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. It is a manner in which the wise teacher instructs his students in a familial way. He calls male students son, though certainly both men and women are taught in the books of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. But in Psalm 45, speaking to a woman, he calls her daughter instead of son, and he instructs her in the way of wisdom. I further suggest that the daughter here spoken to is none other than the woman last mentioned at the end of verse 9. After the psalmist describes this queen at the king's right hand, he turns to her and speaks words of wisdom. Now the only queen of our King Jesus Christ is the church. Since we are his church, we are the woman being addressed in verse 10 and following. Now some commentators, again, read into the words of verse 10 and following the picture of a wedding. In verse 10 it is understood by some commentators that a bride is being spoken to, encouraging her to leave her father's house and people, and focus on her husband-to-be, the king. Again, the connection is made in this regard to the king's daughter in verse 13, as this bride coming in her bridal procession. But again, there are problems with this theory. The daughter of verse 10 is still the one being spoken to in verses 13 and 14. But to follow the picture presented presents a problem. The bride with her companions cannot be brought to herself, the woman being spoken to in verse 14. Also in verse 14, if we look at the parallel phrases of the verse, the daughter is said to be brought to the king, and then the virgins with her are brought to the one being addressed. To be brought to the king and brought to this woman is one and the same event in the parallel structure. When the queen is understood as the woman being spoken to, the whole company of women with the king's daughter are said to be brought to the king and queen, in other words, into their presence. So the king's daughter and this daughter mentioned in verse 10 are not the same woman, and we cannot follow the imaginations of men and bring the picture of a wedding into the psalm when it doesn't fit. So if this is not a wedding, what are we to understand from the words of verse 10 of forgetting your people and your father's house and be subject to the king? Well, the queen is already the queen married to her husband, the king. A husband may have an opportunity any time throughout their marriage to say, "You should not consider your father's house anymore. You are my wife, and we have built a new family. You should not be going back to your father." This is good advice for the married couple at their wedding, 10 years later, and then throughout their marriage. The queen must have a complete focus on the king. She is not to allow her emotions to drive her back to her family and people. She is not to run back to them for security. She must come and bow down to her king. She must give herself wholeheartedly to him. She must say, as Ruth said, "For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God." We, as the queen, even now, hear this advice. We must turn our hearts away from this world and its people. We must turn our hearts away from our first father, the devil. Or maybe we should consider our first father, Adam, and the people, the generation which have come from him. But we are to forsake all and come to our King Jesus Christ, the second Adam. What a wonderful thing! Though we have been so wicked and adulterous against him, though we have been so filthy, he washes us with pure water of the Word and clothes us in pure linen, which is the righteousness of Christ. He decks us with the precious gold of Ophir and gives us honor to stand at his right hand. And though we have been so vile, in the beauty of his holiness, he greatly desires our beauty. Let us consider well even today how we must humble ourselves before our great King. Let us bow down and worship him, forgetting all of this world, forsaking all to follow him.